Max Verstappen ends his season on a high with a record-equalling 15th victory as Charles Leclerc snatches second in the standings from Sergio Perez. This is the F1 Strategy Report. My name's Michael Amanato and this is round 22, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Powered by LeaveCal, keep track of employee leave and make resource planning easy. Search LeaveCal in the Zero App Store. With both championships long decided, Charles Leclerc and Sergio Perez racing for the runner-up spot was the story on track of the Abu Dhabi weekend. Perez appeared to have the upper hand early, starting second on the grid ahead of Leclerc, his Red Bull racing car perfectly dialed into the circuit. But in a race delicately balanced between one and two stops, a rare, perfect strategy call from Ferrari had Leclerc turn the tables. The Monegasque dummied Red Bull Racing into committing a two-stop strategy, costing Perez track position. The Ferrari driver stayed out, setting up an epic 24-lap chase. Perez charged home, desperate to give Red Bull Racing its first 1-2 title finish, but he fell agonisingly short at the flag. Leclerc finished second on the road, and second in the championship. It was a minor victory for Ferrari, but with Max Verstappen running comfortably and unchallenged in the lead all the while, there's no doubt where the centre of power lies looking ahead to 2023. To wrap up the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix and the end of the 2022 season, I'm joined by Ed Straw from The Race. Ed, welcome back to the Strategy Report.
Thanks very much. Delighted to be here.
It is the end of... well, quite a long season, both in the literal number of races and also, you might be forgiven for feeling, 15 race wins for Max Verstappen. In some cases, it may have dragged on a bit. I guess we were lucky, some of them at least, or quite a few of them. We'll get into a little bit of this as we go, were at least decent races. Now, we didn't get the showdown in Abu Dhabi we had last year. Some may say that might be for the best, considering how long that hangover has been lasting. But it did still feel like a bit of a sort of an odd and interesting, maybe in little... saw small individual ways of a race this last one. In particular, we got into the race not really knowing, I felt this way, not knowing 100% how it was going to pan out. The tyres seemed to be behaving a little bit differently. The form guide wasn't maybe particularly clear. Was this, you know, a combination of arriving in Abu Dhabi, which is normally a pretty straightforward thing with new cars and new tyres and the track still being kind of freshly redesigned? Or was this just sort of end of season, everyone's phoning it in a little bit, for want of a better word?
I think there are a few who are maybe phoning it in, particularly those who didn't have a great deal to fight for in terms of their competitiveness on the weekend. There are a few drivers who finished in the lower reaches who weren't very interested in talking about their race afterwards, but who can blame them after such a long season? But yeah, it was unusual, because normally Abu Dhabi recently settles into quite an easy one-stopper, but right the way through the weekend, this was always, oh, is it a one or is it a two stop? And I think that is partly down to the track configuration that was changed last year, particularly that long turn nine left-hander. It means the front right tyre, it asks a lot of that. So there were graining problems with the front right and that could accelerate deg, etc. So that was always going to be quite a big limiting factor. So I think that was the big thing. And obviously the Pirelli tyres this year, slightly different balance, they're a bit understeery. So those combination of things did push everyone into that. Is it a one? Is it a two stop? And it meant that teams didn't really know what was going to happen going into the race. Everyone has their plan A, but then they have to start thinking about alternatives depending on how things pan out. And obviously that was quite crucial in the battle for second place. So it made it interesting because it had that effect in terms of the pit stops, and also because there were some drivers who were having to do quite a lot of tyre management, it condensed things a little bit in terms of the spread and just created the chance for these battles to play out that we haven't seen so much, particularly when you've got Ferraris and Red Bulls in relatively close proximity, which they haven't been that often in recent times.
Looking at this track as well, it's only the second season we've had a race on this configuration. It's not massive change compared to the previous Abu Dhabi, but it's some key changes that have made some differences. And two quite different races, of course, and the new rules this year have muddied that a little bit. But what is your feeling now that we've had two races at this configuration? Is it going to be enough to at least partially balance the reputation this track sort of developed for itself in recent years as a bit of a perpetual boring circuit?
I think ultimately there's only so much you can do. Mm-hmm. The changes they made last year, I think within what was possible, were good and sensible. They were never going to be transformative because fundamentally there's a lot of features of this track that are locked in. If you take a wrecking ball to the hotel and fill in the marina, you'll probably get yourself a little bit of chance to change a few things. But a lot about it is pretty much locked in. You do have those back straights, those twin back straights, which are reasonable for overtaking. But obviously it's a tyre management race very often, partly because of that sort of middle part, last sector of the lap, the bit under the hotel where it's all quite quite twisty. So I don't think the character of this track is ever going to fundamentally change. If you look back the first year in 2009, there haven't really been many great races, great orthodox races here. There have been storied races, the 2010 finale, obviously, last year. There have been a few races where there's been a lot of incidents. But just in terms of a pure race, it's never a great one. And I think you could say they haven't done enough to the track, but you can only work with what you've worked with. So nice step. But I think this is just the reality for the Abu Dhabi circuit. It's a lovely facility, really well put together, scenic, nice place to go. But it's not a classic racing circuit. And I don't think you can ever make it that way, short of just building a new circuit in the same place using some of what's there, but fundamentally changing it.
Well, never say never, I suppose. Who knows what's coming around the corner? It's not been much of a problem for Max Verstappen. Well, in the last 2 years, I guess. Last 3 years, in fact. Won't mention last year, but this year was a pretty comfortable victory for him, all things considered. It was only around 8 seconds, but it was really more in it than just that margin alone. Now, I thought for this episode, considering we had you on for the first episode of the season way back in Bahrain, feels almost like a lifetime ago, considering how long this year has been. Might be interesting to compare how this season has developed as well. And we've sort of seen some interesting markers in this race about that sort of signify the way this season's gone for various teams. We may as well start with Red Bull Racing as well. If we cast our minds back to Bahrain, we're talking about them starting the season kind of unprepared and unreliability in the first race. In fact, two of the first three races really spoke to that. Obviously, what we ended up getting, as we saw in Abu Dhabi this weekend, was really quite different. Is that weirdly the story of the season, in the sense that what we got established in the early part of this campaign, what we thought was being established, actually was not the story at all? It was never the real performance picture we were ever going to get.
Yeah, well, if you look a few races into the season, it was Ferrari versus Red Bull, the question marks over the Red Bull reliability. Obviously, Verstappen had two retirements in the first three races. He won in Saudi Arabia, so clearly the car was quick. But we had this kind of landscape where there were question marks over the reliability, where the Ferrari was quick over a single lap, a little bit closer in the race, but capable of winning. The Red Bull was fast in a straight line, the Ferrari slightly less so. Some of those things held, but ultimately Red Bull did just stretch their legs in the long term, and that comes down to the fact that really they did nail the car better than everybody else. They understood, and this is where Adrian Newey's really strong in terms of the input he had. He's very good with any set of rules or any set of technologies, understanding where your key performance areas are and working out those trade-offs. And I think that's something he's fed into the car. So it did prove that the Red Bull, particularly once they'd fettled it across the first quarter of the season, was just the stronger car. But we did see, obviously, Australia beaten fair and square. There are a few times when Red Bull struggled with tyres. Austria was another one, and Ferrari were there. But by and large, yeah, it didn't really happen. I think the one thing that did make it easier than it should have been for Red Bull was Ferrari's errors earlier in the season. We did see quite a few races where Ferrari could have won, and they didn't. You think of races like Spain, Baku, Leclerc retired. That was a possible win. France, he crashed. That was a race he was leading. Obviously, the strategy was yet to play out. Monaco. So there are a lot of races that Ferrari left on the table, and Red Bull in this phase of the season where they were not struggling, but just still getting into their stride, were handed victory. So when they did comfortably get the most competitive car, they were just already away. So it's so easy. And when you've got a big lead, it becomes so easy because you don't have to take chances. Ferrari started losing it on strategy, etc. And yeah, I just think that did fundamentally change the character of the season. And it went from the point where we had Ferrari versus Red Bull, Verstappen versus Leclerc, to the point where you were getting those races kind of Spa time, Hungary time, where Verstappen was starting down the grid. But I've never known somebody starting down the grid to so inevitably win, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. You're thinking, yeah, no problem, he'll get to the front and he'll win. And that's partly because the car was very good, partly because Verstappen, now he's evolved as a driver, he's kind of settled in, he's got that patience in races. He doesn't feel the need to force the issue. We have seen races in the past where he started down the grid and he's been a little bit too determined to get to the front quickly. Now he's a bit more relaxed. He takes the clear chances when they're there. And actually, ironically, I think that means he gets to the front quicker, because he's just playing what's in front of him. He's not trying to force the issue. So, yeah, ultimately the combination of the Red Bull car and Verstappen was just absolutely unstoppable. And we should note, with a lesser driver than Verstappen, it would have been a lot harder, because as we saw with the battle Perez had with Leclerc over the season, just because you're in a Red Bull doesn't mean you're beating everybody guaranteed. You've got to work pretty hard there as well. So, yeah, not the championship we were maybe hoping for in the end, but still some interesting storylines. And most importantly, it lays the foundations for the seasons to come with these new regulations.
Yeah, I think it's a really good call as well. Thinking back to those races where Verstappen really hit his straps around about the middle of the year after the mid-season break in particular, and Spa was one of the highlights of his domination, was the measure he had over Sergio Perez, the guy in the same car, kind of illustrates that there's clearly a pretty big margin the driver himself has. The reverse side of the coin, as you mentioned, was Ferrari. The start of the year back in Bahrain, it was a bit of a surprise package. Maybe didn't expect them to be quite so fast straight from the off, particularly considering the base they were starting from last year. And in that race in Bahrain, they made some pretty good calls. In fact, they won in part because of strategy over Max Verstappen. In the end, the car retired and there was no contest and they scored a 1-2. They also have ended the season now in Abu Dhabi, making some pretty good calls for both Leclerc and Sainz. Two different strategies, both correct in the end, even if Sainz got a position by default off Hamilton, but it looked like he was kind of on track to reach and catch him anyway towards the end of the race. Now, one, or in this case, two good strategy races obviously don't make a campaign, as you've already mentioned. Bad strategy was really a big part of it. But how important was this result going into the off-season, with two really good calls to overcome, or hold off, I should say, Sergio Perez and overcome eventually Lewis Hamilton, considering the year they have been through?
Yeah, it's nice for them to finish off with the boost of playing it really well. And they did play this race really, really well. They were slightly helped by the fact that because Verstappen was one-stopping and because Perez was struggling a little bit with the tyres, the pace was a bit contained, so for the Ferrari drivers weren't having to extend themselves too much. That's one of the reasons Ferrari argue the tyre deg has been a problem, in that they're having just to push a little bit harder to try and stay in the game, if you see what I mean. So it's a what came first scenario, the chicken or the egg. Is it that you fundamentally are struggling for pace because you've got tyre deg, or you don't have the fundamental pace, so you're putting yourself more into tyre trouble trying to make something happen? But considering what Ferrari's been through, and they have had a lot of strategy errors, there's clearly problems there in terms of their decision-making process. We saw that at Interlagos when everything was going wrong in qualifying in terms of what tyres they were putting on, and confusion. And obviously they sent out one car for Q3 on intermediates in Leclerc. Sainz was on the slicks. And I think probably they tried to get that completely wrong, because I think they were quite keen on sending both out on intermediates, and it was only after a little bit of a disagreement with Sainz's side that they got the slicks that they wanted. So it was very positive for them to have this, and not just making the right calls and the way it played out, but also giving that box opposite instruction, trying to kind of push Red Bull into taking the pit stop to cover the undercut. But it's also partly because they did have the pace to do it, because Leclerc was threatening at the end of stints to catch Perez on track and threaten him. He was there for an undercut range or attack range. So Red Bull with Perez, whichever way they were looking, there was a threat. It's whether it's the undercut or whether it's the battle on track. And they always felt they'd try and preserve the track position from the undercut until they realized that actually Leclerc was making that one stopper work. So they played that really, really well. And I would say also that Leclerc fed into it quite well. There have been times this season when he knows, he'll admit this, that he hasn't given quite the same strategy feedback that teammate Carlos Sainz has been able to do, and he's been working on that. I don't think Leclerc sees the race quite as comprehensively as Sainz does. I think the nature of drivers they are means that Sainz has got a very good feel of strategy. I think Leclerc's had to work at it a little bit, but there was a point in the race where Ferrari were thinking, oh, I don't know whether we're going to make this one stopper work, and Leclerc was like, no, this is absolutely fine, leave me out, I'm going to keep going. And it played out really well. And yeah, the reward was second place and second in the championship. So it's a small win for Ferrari. It doesn't eradicate all those races where the strategy went wrong or there was confusion. There's clearly work that needs to be done. But it's at least nice not to go into the season with everyone asking them, what on earth were you doing there? You got that spectacularly wrong. So yeah, a victory for the strategy team, at least, to finish off the season.
The potential of Ferrari is sort of, in a sense, the story of their season, that they had a quick car they couldn't make the most of. They've been in positions to capitalize with strategy. They often haven't done that. And it does feel like that's especially the case considering, as we've mentioned, the low base they started from last year. You know, if you do zoom out and not actually look in a granular sense at what's happened in all the races, you'd say they've actually come quite a long way, and this season on paper could be considered a success in that sense. Of course, we know the missed opportunities means probably pretty difficult to say this was a successful season for Ferrari. We know leading into this race, perhaps as a result of all of those things, Mattia Binotto's had a lot of question marks over his head. The team principal there, the Italian media, was pretty convinced that he might be dropped before the end of the year. Maybe that still happens. Who knows? How big is that, in, to your mind, a potential turning point? Is a race like this enough to kind of stave that off because of the reason we saw that potential again, that things can go right if they're given time? Or is the weight of the failures of this year too great, really?
I think it's a small help, but in the grand scheme of things, only really a drop in the ocean. So I think if Ferrari are minded to change the regime there, the die will be cast and it will happen regardless. It is a strange season for Ferrari. If you'd said, say, in, I don't know, November last year, right, Ferrari, you're going to win four races next year, you'd be second in the championship, both drivers and constructors, you think, actually, that's a pretty good step for them. That means they're up at the sharp end, they're winning races again. Obviously, the big question this season was about the power unit package, because they had their problems a few years ago with the FIA suspecting they were running the power unit illegally at times. They said they couldn't prove that, but they did get Ferrari to collaborate with them to close some of the loopholes, let's put it that way, that Ferrari felt they were perfectly legally exploiting. The FIA may be suspected otherwise, and with the engine homologation, the engine freeze coming in for this year, it was essential that the power unit package was strong this year, and the power unit package was strong. The car was competitive. They won four races. They could easily have won 5, 6, 7. Maybe that would have changed things a little bit in terms of the way the season played out, because the team would have been a bit more confident. So perhaps there'd been a bit of a virtuous circle and 6, 7 wins could have become 8, 9 wins, particularly in that first part of the season when they were much more strong. However, because they did start so well, 2 wins in the first 3 races, because the championship challenge evaporated, because they were caught up in these question marks about reliability, and of course that reliability was connected to how aggressive they were with the engine. You can make reliability changes with permission, so you're right to chase performance and risk the reliability. And then these question marks about the way the team was being run, the strategies, etc. So it's really, really strange. There's lots of different perspectives you can perceive this season as being. The big question is, do they get to the end of the season in a situation where you think if they've got a competitive car next year, that let's say over the season it's quick enough to fight for the title, are they operationally sharp enough to be able to pull it off? Right now, Ferrari feels like a team that's quite a long way from being able to go toe-to-toe with Red Bull, as strong as it is, with Verstappen driving absolutely superbly, and come out on top. That's a big ask, because the number of strategy errors that Red Bull make, it's very small. Everyone makes mistakes sometimes. But if you look at those big three teams, you'd say it's Ferrari makes the most errors. Mercedes has its days where it gets things wrong. But Red Bull, very, very rare. They're very in control, so that the bar is set high. So I don't really know how Ferrari will perceive it, but they have done the bits that are actually quite difficult. Aero-wise, they came up with a good car. They've got a quick car. The engine has the performance. So they've done the difficult things almost. Because there are lesser teams with lesser budgets and less resources that do play things like strategy very, very well. So these are things that are accessible just to a well-run organisation. And they need to look very, very closely at these things over the winter. I'm very much in two minds about whether the suggestion of having a change of leadership makes any sense, because it all depends whether you think fundamentally the leadership is the problem there. And it's one of those things. Just because something's going wrong doesn't mean that you should change your team principal. Just because something's going right, it doesn't necessarily mean your team principal's doing a great job. These things can be separate. So it's important they get to the root cause of their problems. But overall, I'd say Ferrari, there is more positive than negative this season. And I think that's important, because it wasn't so long ago they were buried in the midfield. Obviously, they finished third last year. 2020 was a dreadful season for them because primarily of these engine things. They haven't won a world championship since 2008, when they got the constructors title and a driver's title since the year before. So this is a long drought. They're not too far from edging into the territory of the length of that famous drought before Michael Schumacher got the first driver's title in 2000. 21 years on from Jody Scheckter's. So I think Ferrari have to recognise there were weaknesses and failings, but they also have to be a little bit careful about disregarding the progress that has been made. And they have invested in terms of facilities, and new simulator was up and running the back end of last year, driver in loop simulator. So their infrastructure and facilities have been upgraded. Obviously they've adjusted size-wise for the cost cap. So I think you probably have to put this season down as a very heavily qualified success. Not a great success, but a success nonetheless. Four wins, and it's amazing really they only had four wins because they could have had a lot more. But that's, if you can get four wins and be disappointed and think you should have had more, that speaks of a pretty decent season and a pretty good step for them. But that's what they need to work out over the winter, how happy they are with things and whether they can fix things to avoid this happening next year. Because what they can't afford is to have a quick car next year and continue to squander victories through these various problems.
You can understand in that context why Leclerc seemed pretty chuffed with the idea that he dummied Red Bull into making a strategic error. As Ferrari's described it, Red Bull said, well, maybe they didn't have so much of a choice. He's talking, of course, about essentially tricking, in his words, I suppose, Sergio Perez into making that second pit stop around about lap 33. So not that far after half distance, all things considered, doing a long second stint. He had 20 seconds to make up more or less in the final 24 laps, fell just less than 2 seconds short in the end. Now, on the one hand, you can say Verstappen managed the one stop fine. The other hand, you can say Sergio Perez is not Max Verstappen. Overall, was this strategy with Perez, considering as well that he was dropped into traffic at one point, had a bit of a slow stop, was it just a little bit loose from Red Bull on what was sort of billed as a fairly important day for this team that really quite desperately wanted to finish 1-2 for the first time in the driver's standing?
I think the first order problem was that Perez ultimately wasn't looking after the tyres well, certainly not as well as Verstappen did, which I know sounds unusual, but we have seen that at times this year. The front tyre management was the challenge. He was getting the graining. The front right was opening up both in the first and the second stints, which is why he was always vulnerable as the stint progressed. You see Leclerc closing in both. So it was this pincer movement almost. There was a pace problem. There was a range problem, strategic problem. So there were a lot of difficulties there. And you can say the conservative approach would have been to try and preserve the track position and leave Perez out and try and hope he can keep Leclerc behind. But then, of course, Leclerc could easily have undercut. The undercut was powerful. So it would be very easy to say, well, you should have done that. And then he'd been jumped. And he said, well, why didn't you take the slightly more aggressive approach and cover the undercut? So it's always these things when we talk about strategy. Strategy doesn't fundamentally change your pace. Your pace is what it is, and strategy is a tool and a weapon, but it's not a fix-all. There's not necessarily one strategy that wins the battle. For Perez to have beaten Leclerc, the number one thing he would have needed is to be able to match what Verstappen could do on the tyre management. If he could have done that, he could have done a comfortable one-stopper, probably just parked in front of Leclerc all race, and it wouldn't have been an issue. So, yeah, when push comes to shove, I think that's the main problem. Then you've got all those questions of could Red Bull have used Verstappen to interfere with Leclerc a little bit more to help Perez? You know, maybe there's that brief stint in the second stint where Verstappen was parked ahead of Perez and Perez was complaining. They could have released Perez mainly, maybe, and found a little bit of extra time for him there. But ultimately, I think when you're talking about second in the championship, there is an element of, is it really that important to jeopardize a Grand Prix win? To get second in the championship is nice. I'm sure there's a bonus for Perez or whatever for doing that, but it's not the be all and end all. It's not winning the championship. So I don't really blame Red Bull for not bending over massively backwards to do it. And ultimately, Sergio Perez had the best car in the field. He had ample chance to finish second in the championship, and that was decided over the whole season. So yeah, it's difficult to look too closely at this strategy. There probably was a way to finish second in this race, but fundamentally, the tyre management of Leclerc and the pace of the Ferrari and the fact that Red Bull did have to contain their pace to protect the tyres as well just created those circumstances where he was backed into a corner, and there's a good chance he'd have lost whichever way Red Bull went with the strategy.
It's been really interesting to see this year that Perez's historic strength, or one of his reputational strengths, which has been tyre management, has been bested pretty much on all occasions by Max Verstappen. Maybe one of his, I think it's almost always an underrated strength of some of the top drivers. Like we like to say that about Lewis Hamilton. We say that about Max Verstappen as well. Maybe it just is one of the things that makes a good driver. We need to talk about it like that. But I thought that was also one of the interesting ways you could cut this defeat. I thought as well, there was the really smallest, most slim of ironies that one of the elements that prevented Sergio Perez or contributed to Perez not being able to catch Leclerc at the end was that Lewis Hamilton held him up. And maybe some people would have thought about the way that Perez held Hamilton up last year, much smaller scale and way smaller stakes, far less relevant in the grand scheme of things. But maybe that would have been some kind of tiny consolation to Hamilton. What's been a pretty poor year by his statistical record, not his own performances per se, but this is the lowest championship finish he's ever had. No wins, no poles, never happened before in his car racing career. And the season started on the podium, pretty unexpected at that point because Mercedes was off the pace. And after sort of an optimistic end to the season, it felt like Abu Dhabi looked very familiar for that first part of the year. Again, Mercedes was kind of just the third best car and wasn't really in the mix. How much after these last three races, the three before Abu Dhabi, was Abu Dhabi a reminder of how much Mercedes still has to do? I mean, we're talking about porpoising at the start of the year. We're talking about bouncing again in this final race of the year. Is this a little bit of a sobering final race for that team?
To an extent, yes. They went into it with their eyes open. They knew this wasn't going to be a great circuit for them. Mexico, they felt, was the absolute best track for them. And then Interlagos was kind of up there, maybe the second best. So they've had a couple of good tracks recently. They were not fearful of Abu Dhabi, but they knew it was going to be difficult because it's all about the track configuration, the corner speed profiles, how you have to set the car up in terms of your aero and your ride and your suspension. And Abu Dhabi's just not really in the right sweet spot for them. So there was always that concern that the porpoising would come back, the bouncing would come back, which it did. And that fundamentally limited them. They did hope that maybe the tyre management would help them out a little bit against Ferrari, but again, because the pace was contained for everyone, that didn't really help a great deal. So I think it's a reminder for them not to get too complacent, but at the same time, if you go to a race weekend not expecting to go well, knowing that your car shouldn't work on that track and it doesn't work on that track, then at least it shows you've got a reasonable grasp of what you're talking about. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a handy reminder. There's a lot of things in that car that were locked in that they couldn't change or they didn't feel was worth changing, given that they were effectively out of championship contention very early on. So they've made sure they focused on next year. I think in the big picture, the fact they got that morale boosting win at Interlagos was a nice thing to get. This was a little bit of a weekend to get through, but I don't think it's a blow. I don't think it invalidates the progress they've made with understanding the car. The question is whether they've understood absolutely everything or whether there's some little hidden hole there waiting for them to fall into with the designer of the car. I did ask Toto Wolff about that last night, and they're being quite rigorous in trying to make sure that everything's carefully worked through for next year. So yeah, I think they could be fairly happy with their finish to the season, even though Abu Dhabi wasn't a great one by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, Hamilton not getting a win. It's another one of those things. It's a bit like second in the championship. Getting a win every year, it's nice, but it's not what I consider a real record, if you see what I mean. It's a statistical curiosity and a good thing to win every year, but it's not the be-all and end-all, is it? Ultimately, what really matters is how they get on next year, and he could easily have won Interlagos without the clash with Verstappen maybe. So yeah, the big picture for Mercedes, a lot of understanding. This has been a great laboratory experiment for them, if you like, understanding this car. They've got quite a long way, and yeah, I don't think anything that happened in Abu Dhabi really changes the storyline for Mercedes this year.
The two key battles I want to touch on before we wrap this one up, because we went into this race with all bar first and last and the constructors standing still live as a championship fight. Not so much change. There were some close finishes, though, which we will get to, of course, Alfa Romeo and Aston Martin in a second. But I do want to wrap up with McLaren and Alpine, one of the least likely of the title battles, considering the points between them, and Alpine did end up closing that out, despite Lando Norris being best of the midfield in this race and also finished best of the midfield in the Drivers' Championship as well, with a pretty handy buffer, all things considered. But It strikes me that despite all that, Alpine does feel like it has had the quicker car for most of this year. Fernando Alonso retired from this race, not for the first time with an engine problem. Similar to Ferrari in the sense that's been a very key strategic decision for Alpine to really push on performance, worry about reliability later. They've scored fourth in the constructor standing, so I guess by that sense it's a success. But considering how much trouble they've had this year, is the fact that it was so close with McLaren heading towards the end of it a cause for concern in the way that Fernando Alonso suggested this team actually is not prepared rather than simply having taken that risk on reliability?
Yeah, there is a big warning on the reliability side, and I think it was another water pump related failure for Fernando Alonso. They have changed the water pump early in the year. Jeddah, he had a retirement because of that, failed, and they made a request to make a reliability change and could. So obviously they haven't fixed that problem that they've known about. It could be a slightly different version of the same problem, but yeah, that I think it's legitimate to be concerned about that. But having said that, again, for the same reasons I talked about earlier with the engine homologation, it was the right move for them to be aggressive with the engine performance and risk reliability. So that's kind of to be expected. I think what they will be concerned about is if you look at the way the points played out, I think the Alpine was the stronger car. But if you look at the points that were scored by Lando Norris and Daniel Ricciardo and Esteban Ocon and Fernando Alonso, it's pretty clear that with a better second driver, McLaren would have finished fourth. Now, that's not for want of trying on Daniel Ricciardo's part, on McLaren's part, but it's kind of inescapable mathematically that that's the case. Lando Norris got 122 points, Daniel Ricciardo got 37. In a very difficult season. Obviously, this season was meant to be better for Ricciardo. It was actually worse than last year. So that has made a big difference. So there was a way for McLaren to actually have won this quite comfortably, even if Ricciardo had got half of Norris's points rather than just under a quarter. That would have put them comfortably ahead. So it's an interesting little battle between those two. McLaren's very much got its sights on 24 because they've invested in their wind tunnel that will come online next year. They've invested in their driver and loop simulator. They've pushed hard in terms of getting their production capability up. All the while, Alpine is working on improving things as well. So they're the two at the front of the queue to join that top three. They've both got their weaknesses and their problems to overcome. But yeah, Alpine would be kicking themselves if they hadn't finished fourth because they had the pace. And McLaren, even though they will say, yeah, we were fifth on merit, that's where we were, there was quite an easy pathway to doing this. And I'm sorry to say it was Daniel Ricciardo that cost them ultimately, which is unfortunate because it's very costly in the championship. That's maybe $11-12 million for each position, the constructors, depending on how the final accounts work out for F1. Plus, they've had to pay him quite a bit to drive for them for a few years, plus they're paying for next year. So for what seemed like a great logical signing for a driver who's been superb for more than a decade before that, it's just the final kind of nail in the coffin of how disappointing Daniel Ricciardo's stint has been. But we should say Lando Norris, I think, has been really outstanding this year as well. Again, in this race, he was at the front of the midfield, just keeping out of his way. I expect people watching the race barely noticed him. He was actually falling into the clutches of Ocon at the end of the race because they only had one set of the hard tyre, so he was on the mediums and losing pace later on. But ultimately, he never really looked like he was going to lose it. Esteban Ocon, as everyone says, he was one lap away from passing him. It's always one lap away. But I think Norris had that reasonably well under control. But yeah, I think we'll see probably a similar sort of battle next year. And there's obvious weaknesses that those teams need to improve if they want to be sure of winning that fight next year.
There was a weird intersection in this fight with the one for the constructors' places behind them, battled between Aston Martin and Alfa Romeo. Aston Martin scored points with both cars, doesn't happen so often, but both managed to get it done, including Sebastian Vettel in his final Formula One Grand Prix. Alfa Romeo was never really in contention for points this race, but really needed Aston Martin not to score too many to hold six in the constructors' standings. After the race, Valtteri Bottas in particular said that their entire strategy setup was designed to try and hamper Aston Martin and even benefit McLaren and Alpine because they could then hamper Aston Martin themselves. And ultimately it worked because they've held that position. But it's a really interesting consideration we don't talk about too much, too often, mostly because usually they're out there fighting for themselves. We don't have circumstances like this so often. But how do you reflect on the way Alfa Romeo played this race with Zhou Guanyu in particular, undercutting some of the drivers ahead to hamper them, Valtteri Bottas running a long stint principally just to get in the way of other cars? How do you see the way they played this one?
Yeah, I quite liked it, actually. I thought they really, really did commit to it. Obviously, they would have, had they had a great first lap, which Alfa Romeos do not have in F1 this year. They generally go backwards on the first lap, and they did not have a particularly good first lap this time around. Bottas dropped to last. Yeah, I liked the way they committed so firmly to it. It wasn't kind of a half-baked, yes, we'll get in the way if we can. They went in with, as you say, a very clear plan to run interference on the Astons. So, yeah, they split the strategy for that reason. Bottas was always going to just run long and park in the way. They brought Joe in quite early for his first stop. He said he would have ideally carried on. He actually had a pretty good first stint, made up some ground, but they brought him in to make sure he could undercut and then be in the way. And then both drivers were able to cost a little bit of time. And when you look at it in the end, they ended up level on points. So Alfa Romeo finished sixth based on count back to Bottas's Imola results, a fifth place he had there. And Vettel was right with Ricciardo in those closing stages. And had he been able to make a pass on Ricciardo, that would have swung the battle in Aston Martin's favour. And again, like I said, that's $11, $12 million probably worth of championship position, even if it is only six. So I like what Alfa Romeo did. They recognised the situation they were in. They weren't too bad on pace this weekend, but they both had tyre trouble in terms of tyre prep trouble in qualifying. So were down the grid. And I think it's quite admirable, actually, that they looked at what they had in their locker and said, actually, this is our best weapon to deploy. And there aren't many cases of teams committing quite so emphatically, both cars, to doing that and getting in the way. And it worked. That's the really positive thing. You can't say 100%, but they did cost Vettel some time. He didn't need that much to have beaten Ricciardo. So, yeah, all credit to them and to the drivers for pulling it off. And it's been such a weird season for Alfa Romeo. They've only scored 4 points in the last 13 races. Mm. That's the least of all teams. So I kind of understand why they were feeling they'd be better off going into a race to try and spoil others rather than trying to score in their own right, particularly at a track like Abu Dhabi where it's difficult to make progress. So I'd say hats off to them for committing to that and to making it work. And I think the key was they did 100% commit to it. That was always the mindset. And both drivers were, particularly Joe, actually, they were pretty pleased with themselves after the race for having pulled it off.
And Joe was key in slowing Vettel down as well. So in a season in which he hasn't been able to score quite as many points as Bottas for a variety of reasons, he can at least say he contributed absolutely where it counted for a great deal in this last race. Is it fair to say, flipping the coin here for Aston Martin, that there were points left on the table for Sebastian Vettel, though? He was pretty disappointed with the strategy he got. He ran a one-stop strategy, ended up battling Daniel Ricciardo, as you said, with a faster car towards the end of the race, but clearly not enough to really get past, whereas Lance Stroll finished ahead of him, having been behind him earlier in the race. Was it a little bit of a missed trick for Aston Martin, considering they really had the pace to score pretty reasonably well?
Yeah, I think so. With an orthodox strategy, Vettel would have been finishing the race ahead of Lance Stroll, and he'd have been in that Lando Norris, Esteban Ocon area. Obviously, he was giving Ocon a hard time in the first stint. So it was a slightly, I get why they did it. They kind of wanted to split the strategy in the end, but Vettel was quick. He had a really strong weekend. In fact, he signed off in F1 in some style with a good performance. His qualifying performance was very strong. Actually, his Q2 lap, they reckoned, was one of his best of the season. But yeah, just with a normal strategy, things would have panned out much better. The problem is, if you're going to one stop, there are times when you're a bit out of sync with people and you'll lose time, particularly when you've got Alfa Romeo's deliberately doing it. I do wonder if they'd slightly underestimated how determined Alfa Romeo were to get in the way there as well. But yeah, an orthodox strategy for Vettel would have been fine. And as he said over the radio later on, how do we get this strategy so wrong? Because they only needed one place. It would have been very, very easy for him to beat Daniel Ricciardo. Daniel Ricciardo did one stop as well, but they made that one work a little bit better, just in terms of the fact he stopped earlier than Vettel did. I'm going to say lap 19 off the top of my head. Yeah, it was lap 19, whereas Vettel came in on 25. So that helped him, and Vettel didn't have a great stop either. So, yeah, Aston Martin will be kicking themselves there. There was a relatively straightforward way to have got that extra point that they needed, and that is costly. But I think once the dust settles on that, they can look at how they've played this season and be pretty satisfied with it. There was a point earlier this year, if you looked after Canada, where the idea they could have beaten Alfa Romeo in the championship was pretty fanciful. Alfa Romeo won 51 points at that point. Aston Martin only had 16 and were really struggling. So I think getting into contention for sixth was good for them. It's just a little bit of a shame that they did. I wouldn't say drop the ball. I see how it happened, but it would have been relatively straightforward for them to have got that extra point or even more than that and pretty comfortably got that sixth place.
It'll be really interesting to see how these teams fare in the next year and further than that, of course, with Audi on the horizon for Sauber and Aston Martin having pretty sizable investment as it is and developing so much, as you said, through the year. I think it'll be really interesting to see how that midfield develops. They were the key battles of Abu Dhabi. But as a final question, Ed, we started this season on this podcast in Bahrain, bringing in the first race of these new regulations. We got a pretty interesting race there, but of course, it's only the first race. You can't learn so much from a single race as a sample size. Looking at the season overall, obviously it wasn't competitive in a championship sense as it was last year, although there are reasons to think that might improve over the next couple of years. That's usually the case with rules changes. But looking at this season overall, how do you rate the way that the rules have changed the sport this year? Perhaps putting aside the competitive nature that always seems to happen, do you feel like the racing is on the right trajectory, given that was the aim?
Yeah, I think there have been improvements. The cars do follow better than they did. Now, there is a fundamental limitation here, which is the laws of physics. Not even F1 can change those. So there is always going to be an effect. Short of running in a vacuum, which is technically challenging and isn't good for downforce, that is going to happen. So we can't pretend you can have high downforce, high performance cars like this that will not have some kind of turbulence. But it was reduced. And drivers have said that it was much easier to get closer than before. You kind of get to that 1 second range. You do then start to get some dirty air, but it's not quite as pronounced. The FIA has done some analysis of this, and it is the data does show that it has improved. Doesn't mean it's perfect. There's still more to come, but this was very much the first phase of these radically different cars with the return to the ground effect force. So I think that's quite positive. The tyres were a limitation as well, obviously slightly understeery. Still, there's temperature management that's required in those tyres. So there's some work to be done there from Pirelli as well, although they too made a step. And then there's this whole longer term thing, which is that regime with the cost cap, with the Concorde Agreement, offering a slightly more equitable distribution of the funds. That means on a long timeline, we should see gradually teams closing up, certainly in terms of their performance potential. That's going to take quite a long time to happen, though. That's not a quick fix, instant effect. So we've got to let that play out over, you're talking years here, you know, you're talking 5-10 years before you start to really see an effect from that. So I think F1 can be reasonably pleased with it. It's never going to be a situation where it's ultra, ultra close in terms of everyone being within kind of a half a second of each other and changing positions every other lap, etc. It's not really that kind of racing, but I think they've got a good foundation here, and over time we'll probably see things close up. Second year of regulations often aren't the ones where you really start to see things close up. Normally you have to get a little bit further down the line, but as Nicholas Tombassis said yesterday, a group of us had a chat with him about the success. He said, if this was year five of the regulations and this was the spread, they'd be very worried. But actually, for a first year, it's about expected, because there's a lot of legacy advantages for these big teams that aren't going to go away just like that. So it's no surprise to see Red Bull, Ferrari and Mercedes as the top three. But I think it's a promising step. And the tendency is to say these things are either brilliant or they're terrible. But actually, I think within what was possible, quite a nice step. And then the next key will be those 26 regulations they're working on. We'll have new power units then, but also there will be changes to the cars. They've set out they want to have less draggy cars, partly because of the power units. They want to have slightly lighter cars as well. So there's things they can do to take the next step in these regulations. So I think it's been pretty good. A few drivers have been critical of it. I think Vettel suggested it was a lot of effort for not a huge gain, but ultimately you are butting up against the problems of physics. So we can't pretend that you can have this magical world where cars can follow each other really closely. And people always want overtaking to happen lots, but be really, really difficult as well. So the DRS is still a necessary evil. There's that kind of hope in the background that the DRS could one day be unnecessary, but it is still needed. Again, that's an aerodynamic, that's a scientific reality. So yeah, it's not perfect, but a pretty good. I sort of say you're kind of in 7 out of 10 territory for the progress they've made, which I think is pretty good.
That is pretty good. You do like a good rating, and I think 7 out of 10 is pretty good. So I'm pretty satisfied with that. So should Formula One, I think. And certainly Max Verstappen will be satisfied, because what a year he's had. Two-time world champion, a great season for Red Bull Racing as well. And now the question is whether anyone can match them next year. Ed, thanks so much for joining me on the final podcast of the year for Formula One 2022.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for having me. It's good to bookend the season. I have to say that first one, Bahrain, seems a very, very long time ago now.
Max Verstappen's second championship looked nothing like his first. Composed, calm, and in control, he found a new level this season and has only strengthened an already deep bond with Red Bull Racing in a formidable partnership. Ferrari couldn't sustain its challenge this year, and Mercedes was never in the fight, but even if both teams draw level next season, they'll still have to break Max to halt what looks like the beginning of a Verstappen era. Thanks very much to Ed Straw for joining me. The Strategy Report is powered by LeaveCal. Keep track of employee leave and make resource planning easy. Search LeaveCal in the Xero App Store. You can subscribe to The Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts, and don't forget to leave us a rating and a review to help spread the word. You can also find us on social media. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast. Special thanks to Ben Loke from Bloke Designs for the show artwork, and our theme music is by Simon Hosford. And so another season draws to a close. And despite the one-sided nature of the championship, I thought we had a pretty good year, with some exciting and unpredictable racing at most rounds and some pretty good midfield intrigue that lasted right through to the end. That certainly made things a little bit easier for this show, and a big thanks to all our guests from throughout the year. I've appreciated their time, sometimes across weird time zones, and I'm sure you've enjoyed hearing their perspectives on this year's racing as much as I have. And thanks, of course, to you for listening. In an increasingly congested F1 landscape with more racing than ever, I appreciate you making the time for us every round as we dive into the details of where each Grand Prix was won and lost. So until next time, my name's Michael Laminato. Enjoy the long break, and I'll be back next year for the 2023 Formula One season. Take care.